The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Today on the podcast, there's a new poop-related problem in California.
No, it's not new. Well, it's getting worse. The solution is posing a new problem.
Yes, and we get into that right at the start of the show, which you might question if you have ever heard of radio program before, whether that's the right decision, but we did it anyway.
Well, we're talking economics. We're talking about the social constructs.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about homelessness. And we're talking about poop. And, I mean, doesn't that cover all of the things that everybody has to deal with every day?
Most of them.
Yes.
And somehow these happen in the same show.
Mm-hmm.
But after the poop stuff was over, you got into a little bit of an introspective mode.
Well, because you kind of question what's really important.
Once you've talked about poop for a while?
Yes. Well, it seems that we are living in this world that nothing matters, right? Truth doesn't matter.
No.
Honesty doesn't matter.
Post-fact era.
Yes. Facts don't matter. Truth doesn't matter. Shame doesn't matter. Honor doesn't matter. Nothing matters, okay? Math doesn't matter. Math is a social construct.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, at the same time, everything matters. But they're all the small things.
Yeah.
The big things don't matter. The small little things piss us off to the point where our head pops. And so, when you talk about poop for a while, you do want to say, what's wrong with this society?
Mm-hmm.
And some kind of deep feelings took me by surprise.
We have that and a lot more on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Thursday, August 23rd. Glenn Beck.
Well, we have to start the show with a California update brought to you by our sponsor, New Pooperoni.
Pooperoni on San Francisco streets.
Yes, California's crappy policies now yielding some literal crappy results. In 1 week, last month, the city of San Francisco logged over 16,000 complaints of human poop on the streets. Let me say that again. 16,000 people called the city and went, there, somebody's crapping in the street in front of my house. In 7 days, the mounds of vagrant-generated poop actually forced the closure of a convention being held downtown. You know, didn't somebody just pull a convention because of a bathroom issue in some other state? I mean, this is a bigger bathroom issue. If you live in San Francisco, I want you to know help is on the way. Mayor London Breed was absolutely shocked after walking around town and seeing not only all of the poop, but all of the used drug needles. Now, how many needles are they giving out in San Francisco every month? And it's like 500,000?
It's hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of needles they're giving out. Well.
And some of those come back to be recycled, too. Not all of them.
Well, they're supposed to return them, but you can't expect. When heroin users, they're not always dependable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the mayor has decided she's mad as hell, and she's not going to take it anymore. So she's bringing out the big guns. It's a new really breed of a new hero. I think we're going to be seeing this this action hero on the big screen soon. It is the San Francisco version of Delta Force or the Navy SEALs. And they may already be patrolling your streets in San Francisco, dressed in hazmat suits and patrolling neighborhoods with the state-of-the-art patrol vehicle equipped with a steam cleaner and disinfectant. They are the men and women of the San Francisco Poop Patrol. Yep, this is our country. Now, keep in mind, this story is not a parody. This is true. San Francisco has now allocated over $100 million to combat the poop and needle problem. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, holy crap, $100 million? That sounds like a colossal waste of a ton of money. Really? You can't get it done for cheaper than $100 million? Well, remember, it's California and San Francisco. I mean, the Bay Area, 100 million, you know, San Francisco residents. You remember when $100 million, you know, was a lot of money? It doesn't go as far, you know, as it used to in that hellhole of San Francisco. $100 million in San Francisco, I think, can get you maybe 175 square feet, you know, of a beautiful apartment. Probably, I think, somewhere between 5 and 8 gallons of gas or the poop patrol. So which would you spend it on? The new San Francisco Public Works budget includes $72.5 million for street cleaning. Get this one, $12 million for housekeepers to, get this, clean homeless encampments. Well, first of all, I got one problem. They're not really housekeepers if there is no home. They're homeless. So let me see if I have this straight. If I'm working in San Francisco, I'm just working at a deli, and I'm paying taxes to San Francisco, and I have to go home and clean my house, I'm paying taxes so the people who come and poop in front of my store, I'm paying taxes so they have a housekeeper? Oh, my gosh. Also, $2.8 million for washing down the camps and removing any biohazard. $2.3 million to steam the poop-infested streets. $3.1 million for portable toilets. $700,000 for a 10-member needle cleanup squad. And, of course, nearly $900,000 for the poop patrol. Each member of the poop patrol takes over, you ready? Takes home over $184,000 in salary and benefits. Now, I don't know what it would cost to get me to pick up human poop. It would probably be a little more expensive than that. But are you telling me that you can't find, oh, I don't know, group of teenagers, college students, anybody? How about all of those progressives that just love people so much and they just want to do good? And you're telling me that you can't get them for, I don't know, a bag of weed and, you know, and a hemp dress? You can't get them to go clean the streets of the human feces? Really? $184,000 is what you're paying people to pick up poop? If I may, I'd like to give some advice to the new unit patrolling California streets. If you would like to clean up all the crap in your cities, I would suggest that you start removing the human poop that you, strangely, in California, call politicians. The ones that are throwing all this money at a failed city and a failed policy, one right after another. You can't really get rid of the scent of poop by simply spraying something on it to cover up the scent. You have to shovel it out. May I suggest that you start shoveling out the Capitol building in Sacramento and then work your way down to every city government from there? Wait a minute. I got a name. Poop Patrol for Progressive Politicians and Policy, or the PPPPP. You know, and I think there would be some funding from, you know, rich people all over the country. I mean, I would make a donation right now to the PPPPP. You know, if we could get one in Washington, who's with me? Keep an eye out and look for them coming soon to movie theaters near you, patrolling the streets of D.C. and San Francisco. The Human Poop Patrol. Could we discuss this a little?
Why not?
$184,000 a year for the Poop Patrol.
Of course.
Now, there are services in this service economy we now have.
Yes, yes.
Which will come to your home and pick up the dog poop from your lawn for, like, you know, you come over once a week and it's like maybe $50 a month. You know,
now I appreciate capitalism, but there is also another service that comes over and picks up the poop in your lawn from your dogs.
Okay,
it's called 12-year-old children.
Well, I
As
don't
I
have
explained
one of those,
to my kids, that's what I had you for.
But first of all, that seems like a really high rate.
No.
To go pick up poop.
$184,000 a year gig.
That's
to
a
pick up
great
poop?
Gig. I would think that there's...
Let me ask you this. How much would it take for me to get you into the poop industry right now?
I mean, so am I employed or am I not employed? Like, do I need to leave a job?
Well, you do need... I mean, Google is no longer taking... you know, they're no longer requiring college degrees. Mm-hmm. So let's say you don't have a college degree.
Right.
You know, but you do have some prospects, but you're looking for a job. How much does it take to get you into the...
I mean, 184 easily gets me into that gig, right?
Easily. Easily.
I mean, 100K gets you into that gig probably, too. There's a
line.
You
gotta remember, this is San Francisco. People have... things are much more expensive. It's...
you're picking up poop. That's what you're doing. Right. You're picking up poop.
Thank God there's people doing it. Right. I mean, you want...
No. I will...
you
thank...
would rather have...
No, I will thank God when people stop crapping in the streets.
Well,
when did we become monkeys? When did we, like, you know, just drop the trowel right here and just leave a loaf on the doorstep? When did we become those
it's
people?
It's tough because once the trend starts, it's like, you know, when you go to a concert or something and there's a bunch of parking spots and they're all filled and that first person pulls up onto the curb and onto the grass.
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, you've got rows
yes.
of cars on the
yes.
grass. The first time, I mean, it probably was a little strange,
mm-hmm.
I'll give you. The first
yeah.
time someone was like, you know what? That bathroom's 3 feet away. Instead, I'm going to go here.
Right.
That was probably a strange decision the first time it happened. However, when it's just the thing, when you have an entire product line called Pooperoni,
right.
Which is,
That's
you know.
Delicious. In fact, it's a sponsor this half hour. Don't mock it, Pooperoni.
Pooperoni on San Francisco streets.
When there's enough poop going on at that point, you may need to fight back with employees. $184,000 is a lot, though. That
yeah.
feels to me like a, like, you know, a
I don't know.
$15 an hour job.
It really does. It really does.
Which is pretty...
I'm willing to give you the $15 wage on that one.
Right.
You're picking up poop. It doesn't require you to think. It yeah. just requires you to be willing to pick up somebody's poop.
No, it's gross. It's a gross
right.
job.
I
right.
might even give you $20 an hour.
$20 an hour?
$20 an hour.
There you go. $20 an hour is a lot less than, let's say, $20 an hour times 40 times, let's say, we work every week. It's $41,000.
Yeah.
Seems about a $40,000 job. Really, look, it's a good gig.
It's a
now,
good
San
gig.
Francisco, I mean, you know, I mean, maybe it's probably not going to go that far, but still, you're picking up poop. Right, like it's
right.
not—it's not a high-level.
No, it
job.
Doesn't take a lot of skill. It's not like I've got my degree in poop right. picking up.
Right, there's some jobs like you've talked about this before with certain things you have to do to cows on your farm, which to me sound like completely horrific escapades.
You're talking about the pregnancy check.
Yes.
Yes.
Now
not
you,
fun.
I can't think of an amount of money that you would have to pay me to do that one time in my
Although
life.
Although once you experience it, you are kind of like, you look at the guy with only one sleeve on his shirt and a giant glove that goes up to his shoulder, and you're kind of like, you can feel the baby inside. And he's like, oh yeah. And you're kind, there's a piece of you that goes, I kind of want to feel that once, but then you come to your senses. You're like, no,
no,
no, no, I don't want my hand in the butt of a cow.
So I think there is a premium you pay.
But see, that guy is not just like, he's not like, I just, they pay me to come here right. and just, you know, stick my hand in the butt of a cow. The guy has an education. He's a doctor.
Right, yeah, right. This
right?
is it's
so
actually,
you pay him for more than just doing the thing that you don't want to do.
Right, but I do think part of the premium that doctors receive, and this is all good humans and veterinarians and everything, is the ability to get over the really disgusting stuff you have to do. Now, it's also, you're healing people. It's, but, like, there's people who go and change bedpans, right?
Yeah, that's,
yeah. Like, you know.
Like, the guys who do change bedpans, it should be, I mean, we should look at things. You're changing bedpans and you're, oh, you have to clean up all the vomit, too, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. The guy who's doing breast augmentation, I don't put them, I mean, I like to see their wages come a little closer to each other. You know what I mean? One's working on women's breasts and the other one's cleaning up vomit.
I thank God for both jobs personally, but I would say that I would say that they think there is that idea. This is something we've talked about with the supposed gender wage gap, right?
Yes.
Where women earn only 78 cents on the dollar. We've
not
heard
true.
That stat. It's not true.
True.
Not it's
true.
A BS
not
stat. True. But one of the reasons it's a BS stat is that guys tend to pick jobs where they're very dangerous. You know, some in the middle of nowhere oil rig that is a dangerous, taxing job, physical jobs, and also sometimes kind of the nasty jobs. There's a lot of jobs out there that are really gross. And one of the reasons the women have closed up that gender gap is because they've taken a lot of roles in healthcare that are kind of gross. So there is a premium. Like if you were picking up rappers, you know, candy wrappers after a concert, I think there's a premium you pay to the poop squad from
oh,
that
yeah.
job. Like
you're
paying
working
more.
In Disneyland and you've got one of those little claw things and you're picking up the
some wrappers
and you're putting in the trash can. You're working at Disneyland, man. And you're picking up candy wrappers. Relax. You're picking up poop, human poop.
Mm-hmm.
You get a bonus. You get a bonus. I'm not afraid to say you need to make a little extra more.
But $184,000 might be a little bit too
much. Is too much.
What would you say the difference is from the person who is picking up dog poop for a living, as opposed to someone picking up human poop? I think there's a premium there too. Like if you're going to pick up human poop,
I think there is.
Poop,
but once you're in the poop business.
Maybe you don't notice. I'd be interested to hear from anyone who's in the poop.
No, I think you'd notice. I think there's a slight premium. But it's not the same kind of distance between the candy wrapper guy
right.
and the dog poop guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's that. Once you get into the poop business, you got a large spread. Now, dog poop, human poop, there's still a spread there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like dog poop, human poop, elephant poop. You know, you're just
so elephant is worse.
I think only because of the quantity,
yeah.
And it depends. If you're following one animal in a parade, no. If you're in Africa and you want to have everything clean, and you're at an elephant refuge, yeah, I think that's backbreaking labor.
That is,
you know?
That is. There's something I think different about animal than human. I think like you know, it's just like
well, animals don't wear pants. You expect them to poop on the streets
yeah.
or wherever they're standing. Here in America. We're now apparently just expecting humans to act like animals, and we're cool with it. And the great thing is, it's job creation. If this isn't the perfect example of job creation in a progressive world, I don't know what is. Hey, we can hire more housekeepers because every homeless camp is going to now have housekeepers. So they can't be expected to, you know, clean up their sleeping bag. We got to lay that out. Maybe we can leave a little mint on their pillow, too. We're creating jobs. So they're pooping all over the street. This is a job creator.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
In an interview yesterday, Massachusetts Democrat Senator Elizabeth Warren and the sworn enemy of the President Trump made a fool of herself. Now, that in itself is not news, but the specifics of her statement all started with a goofy, vacant grin and are really disconcerting. Here she is in an interview with host John Berman.
I'm so sorry for the family here, and I know this is hard, not only for the family, but for the people in her community, the people throughout Iowa. But one of the things we have to remember is we need an immigration system that is effective, that focuses on where real problems are. Last month, I went down to the border, and I saw where children had been taken away from their mothers. I met with those mothers who had been lied to, who didn't know where their children were, who hadn't had a chance to talk to their children. And there was no plan for how they would be reunified with their children.
Hmm. Just last month she was there. Now, she wasn't there back in 2014. I know, because I was there. She didn't want to pay any attention to it when it was happening under Obama. But she was there, and she was talking to the mothers who had their children ripped out of their arms. Now, there's a lot to unpack here. First, let's start with the line, You know, of the things that we have to remember is we need an immigration system that is effective, that focuses where the real problems are. Can I ask you what that really means? What does that mean? What does that even mean? Because in this past week alone, ICE, which people like Elizabeth Warren want to abolish, she compares them to Nazis. She wants to abolish them. In this last week, ICE has hauled off an illegal immigrant charged with murder in Mexico. At the request of Mexico, we were tracking him. And how was that reported in the press? That was reported that, oh, this poor guy was just taking his wife. She was ready to have a baby. She was going in for a scheduled C-section. It wasn't like she's like, oh, my, I gotta drive myself to the hospital, too. She was going in for a C-section. He was a murderer. Would you have said, oh, you know what? Oh, jeez. Crap, I didn't know Jeffrey Dahmer was taking his wife to the hospital. Let him go. Let him go have the birth. We'll try to catch up to him later. He's a murderer. They also got rid of a literal Nazi. Something that the Obama administration couldn't get done. Donald Trump's administration put pressure on Germany to take back a Nazi. This guy's been living here since World War II. He killed people in concentration camps. Now, the world is so concerned about Nazis in America. We've got 24 stupid people who are protesting in the street, and you have a literal Nazi. And somehow the Nazi organization, as you call it, ICE, somehow or another, they got him out? I don't even understand it. If anything, the system has failed in not preventing the entry of an illegal immigrant who murdered Molly Tibbet. How dare you say that? Are you saying that all immigrants are murder? Of course I'm not. In no rational or reasonable world is anybody actually thinking that I'm saying all immigrants are rapists. I'm saying here's a guy who, I don't know why, raped this woman and killed her. And you know what? He shouldn't have been here in the first place. Molly Tibbetts could have been hit by a bus. She might have died some other way. Maybe it was her time, but it was not her time to go in that way. If he wasn't here. Then she says, last month I went to the border and I saw where children had been taken away from their mothers. What about Molly Tibbetts? Wasn't she ripped out of the arms of her loving family? Here's this exceptional girl. She didn't say a final farewell. Her parents didn't take her to a dangerous place where they all knew they could be separated. Molly most likely didn't even say goodbye as the front door closed behind her because she was just going for a jog. Here's Molly ripped out of the arms of her family and taken away from her mother permanently. There is no paperwork to work out. There's nothing that might have been misplaced and soon they'll be reunited. She's gone until they're reunited on death. And it wasn't done by a group of people who are just overzealous. She was ripped out of the arms of her family by somebody who shouldn't have been in the country in the first place and is a true monster. I think we need immigration laws that focus on people who pose a real threat. You mean like murderers? Like murderers who murder young women, maybe? I don't think mamas and babies are the place we should be spending our resources. Tell that to the mother of Molly Tibbet. You see, we're talking over each other. And we're fighting a straw man. That's it. There's nobody in America that disagrees. What was it? 8%, 20% maximum? I can't remember what it was. Very low percent of people who said, oh, yeah, no. I think what ICE is doing is great. I think the policy that Obama started of just, you know, ripping them out from their parents and just shoving them all in different jails and cages. I don't think there was nobody, virtually nobody that held that belief. But shouldn't Molly Tibbetts' death signify the need for a more comprehensive system that keeps people out that are criminals? You know, the guy who is taking his wife to the hospital. This guy could have come through the front door. We could have checked. And he could have passed and he would have been good. And then he might have murdered Molly Tibbetts. That will happen in life. But shouldn't we at least try? You know, MS-13 kills four times the number of kids. They've killed four times the number of people than have been lost in school shootings. Four times the number. Why don't we care about them? Warren speaks only in negatives. She's criticizing Trump. She uses the tragedy of a young woman who was murdered and says, yeah, well, that was bad, but no, that was horrifying, full stop. But in Warren's world, the man who murdered her is himself a victim. This is the postmodern system of anti-logic that is getting dangerous. People are dying. Americans are dying. Members of Congress are more concerned about the evils of having a southern border than the actual strife of people on the border, because they weren't there when it was about their side. I was. And they care more about destroying the other side than actual compassion.
It's Thursday, August 23rd. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, I spent the last 5 years, but particular attention in the last two, to figure this out. Okay, I remember trying to figure out around 2004, what the hell happened to us? How did we go from this nation with our founders and to this nation that is so far removed from the Constitution? What happened? And I found progressivism. And everyone told me Woodrow Wilson in the early 20th century didn't matter. And I made my case every day, much to the chagrin of many people in the audience at first, going, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they're liberal or progressive. It does matter. And now I see my country doing exactly what I feared. I take my share, in fact, I think I take more than my fair share of responsibility for what's happening in the country. And I'm willing to do that because I know you know the truth. I know if you watched me and listened to me, you heard me say more about peace and coming together and trying to understand. You heard those words from me more than anyone, left or right. So you know the truth. I don't have to defend it with you. And I'm willing to take more than my fair share if that's what it will take to get people to listen. Everybody wants to hate each other. I don't. And I don't care what I have to do to get you to disarm enough to be able to listen again. Because we're a nation that's not listening to one another. And I know this firsthand because I didn't listen to you during the election. I didn't understand. And instead of doing the human thing, I looked at you as a group. But it's so strange. I heard Don Imus sign off his last broadcast. Every broadcaster in America, every podcaster in America should listen to Don Imus's last 10 minutes. It's so revealing. Here's a guy who was a legend, is a legend. A guy who literally changed radio, changed broadcast. Extraordinarily, extraordinarily bright and talented. And a good man. And in his last 5 or 10 minutes, he wept. As he tried to convince himself, look at the good we did. Look at what we did together. The most important thing he said was, I'm not going to miss radio. I'm not going to miss this show. I'm going to miss you. When he said that, man, my eyes filled with tears because I knew exactly what he was talking about. You and I feel like we're friends. You know me. I don't know you. And people always say to me when they meet, I feel kind of bad and weird because we don't really know each other, but I know everything about you. And I always feel the same way. I know, but I think I know you. Even though I don't, people are listening, many of them wildly disagree. Some I would imagine are in a coma right now and they just have the radio on. So, you know, the person will feel like there's somebody there. By the way, you're doing great. You're going to make it. But the people who come out, I feel like I know you. And I don't think we're different. I know what your heart is. And I know what you... I know your intent. You know mine, to do good, to fix this, to free people, to help people. But we've gone off the rails, and I don't mean us. The entire nation has gone off the rails. And that doesn't seem to be our objective anymore. Our objective now is to stop the other guy, and that's not going to work. I want to talk to you here, and I would love to hear your response. Facebook, Twitter, on the phone today at 5 o'clock. I'm going to do just a half hour of phone calls, and I want to hear your voice on. Look, the Molly Tibbetts story is important, and then I introduce Elizabeth Warren into it, and it cheapens it. But that's important, too. Kavanaugh. Look what they're doing to Kavanaugh. Now they're saying that they're going to have to delay the Kavanaugh vote because, well, I mean, you can't do that with Paul Manafort. What? What are you talking about? Universities are welcoming their students back soon, and they all have plans on how to talk to their students about the statues that might be around the campus. All of these things are important. All of these things are really easy to talk about. But does it further anything? We find ourselves in a country now that in some ways nothing matters, right? How many times have you said or heard a friend say, it's like nothing matters anymore. It's like the truth doesn't matter. Decency doesn't matter. Nothing matters. They're crapping in the streets of San Francisco. They're you know, our president is lying. This president or the last president. And they don't care. The death of shame. Nobody cares about shame. There is no embarrassment anymore on anything. It's like nothing matters. And yet, at the same time, everything matters to the max. Continuing our conversation on what's important and what we should be talking about. And I mean me and you. We're eating around the edges. We're not even into the pie. We're just all eating the crust. That's it. Racism, gender issues, destruction of the family, free speech, violence. What is causing all of this? Where's this coming from? And we're amplifying it because we're concentrating on even smaller stories. We've made our politicians our gods. We've made our political parties our gods. And we've done it mainly without thinking. Be honest. Be honest. Now, maybe conservatives have thought a little bit more about it because they've had their back pushed against the wall for so long that you've probably put some thought into it. But for the left, many times, not all times, but for the left, many times, you haven't really even heard the other side. You didn't even know there was another side. And we're fighting to the death over it. Let me ask you what's more important. The Paul Manafort trial, which had nothing to do with Donald Trump, and I'm not saying that because, you know, I'm on the right. I'm saying that because it's true. What they convicted him of had nothing to do. It all happened before he got together with Donald Trump. So what's more important? Here's a bad guy went to jail. That's a really good story one day. That's it. Really bad guy went to jail. Justice served. Perfect. But we're making this into, this will go on for months. Is that more important than the Christians that are being slaughtered all over the world? The Christians that are being rounded up? Christians that are still in slavery? Christians that are being slaughtered because they won't bow down? The Christians in Asia, 165 churches were just burned in China by the Chinese government. Anybody care? Anybody care? You know that they've just instituted a law. If you have a Bible, you're going to prison. How about this one? How about the Muslims in China? 1 million, hear this, 1 million Muslims have already been rounded up in China. And they're put in concentration camps. We have the photos of the concentration camps. You can find them. You can see them online. It's China. 1 million. Add 5 more million and you've got the Holocaust. Why are we talking about that? South Africa. Is there a genocide going on? Or is it the buildup of a genocide? What's really happening there? I don't know. The loss of freedom of speech, where both sides are celebrating when somebody who they don't like loses their platform or their ability to speak. This should be a all hands on deck warning. We should be hearing the klaxon every single day. If one person loses their right to speak and be heard, we will be next. Nobody is really talking about the destruction of the Western way of life. That you have now one political party who is supporting a group of people who say they want to destroy capitalism and get away from capitalism. They are marching in the streets. No borders, no walls, no USA at all. You have a political party and a media that is supporting that. Well, I think that's probably the biggest story that maybe we should be talking about, maybe in the history of our republic. We apparently have half of a country that is either ignorant or a part of an effort to destroy capitalism and our way of life and to destroy our Constitution. In their words, not mine, not hyperbole. Shouldn't we be, isn't that more important than Manafort or whatever I led the hour with Elizabeth Warren? Isn't that more important? All we're doing is arguing about Trump. And the last 8 years, all we did was argue about Obama. Didn't work, did it? Isn't this the definition of insanity? Should we argue some more about Trump, or should we look for the root cause? Because I know what the root cause is. And once you find it, you will be amazed. You will be, your eyes, the scales will fall off your eyes, just as they did when you really first started to learn about progressivism. And this one isn't protected. This one is wide open. This one will not be accepted by the mass of the people in blue states, or I'm sorry, red states, who are Democrats. They will not accept this. And it's called postmodernism. Do you want to know why we're talking about the destruction of capitalism? Understand postmodernism. You want to know why people are calling white people all kinds of names and white people are not allowed to defend themselves? Postmodernism. You want to know why there's 175 different genders? Postmodernism. You want to know why the destruction of the family seems to be a number one target? Postmodernism. You want to know why freedom of speech, why people on the right, the people who believe in the Constitution, those people are being demonized and being deplatformed and are called all kinds of names and are not listened to and not welcome on any campus? Do you want to know why? Postmodernism. You want to know why we are living in a world that no longer makes any sense, where reason doesn't apply anymore. Logic doesn't apply. Only violence applies. Postmodernism. It's why nothing matters. And we are fighting a fight now, the old fight. We're fighting it like we've always fought it. You're not even fighting the real enemy. You don't even know what the real enemy is. It's like trying to fight in Germany and not even being aware of what Nazis even believed or what their goals were. Not just not speaking their name, not knowing anything about them. You're never going to defeat them. But the problem is, how can we know them when we don't even know ourselves? We don't even know ourselves anymore. Who are we, really? Who are we? I've really had a tough time with God recently. I feel like I need baptism all over again. I can't make heads or tails of my mistakes. I can't make heads or tails of the path anymore. I believe in him. I know who he is. Perhaps for the first time in my life, I'm actually beginning to be humble, because I don't know who I am in some ways. Because the things that I believed, all of the important principles, I still believe. I just don't know how to express them. I don't know how to do my job. I don't know how to make a difference without being a problem. I heard a really important phrase the other day. At the center of all human suffering, that is where you will find God. I know that's true. And let me break it down for people who don't necessarily believe in God. What is God? Love, compassion, empathy, kindness, rational thought, reason. If there is a God, he's the best scientist and the best mathematician out there. Because look at the exactness of the universe. Do you find reason, ration, compassion, kindness, empathy? Are you finding that on Twitter? Because I'm not. Are you finding that on Facebook? Because I'm not. Find that on CNN or Fox or even on this show? I'm trying to find God. And that's what God is to me. And God is also my pal. And I miss my best friend. And I know enough about him to know that he hasn't moved, so I must have. And if I want to find him, we have to find ways to at least empathize with human suffering. And if we can lose ourselves in others, we won't be so outraged every day by the nonsense. If we can just focus on things that matter, perhaps we will stop fighting about all of the things that mean nothing. I care about the Christians in the Middle East. I know you do too. Do you realize that UN agencies, government agencies, have said that this audience has done more than the world? That when it comes to freeing the Christians in the Middle East, you are the model? I care about what's happening to the blacks and the whites in South Africa. I care about the Muslims in China. I care about a guy who has caused me so much angst, so many problems. I care about the voice of Alex Jones. I despise him, but I care about his right to have a voice. Could I ask you a favor? I wish I could offer this to you for free. Please go to Amazon and pre-order my book, Addicted to Outrage. It is your first step into what I'm talking about. And if you want to be a part of the solution, we must break the cycle of outrage. Please. I've worked harder on this book than anything I've ever worked on in my life. Addicted to Outrage.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
We've been trying to get our arms around what's happening in South Africa for a while, and we have not put anybody on the air about it because the people who generally seem to be reporting on this have been unreliable. They are usually alt-righters, and I just don't. I know who the alt-right is, and I don't trust them at all. So I've been really torn because I've seen interviews and I've seen things that are happening that may or may not be happening. Meanwhile, the press is not covering it all. Well, I understand that coming from the press, and I don't trust the press at all. So what the hell is happening? Yesterday, we reached out to a farmer, and we could barely understand him. We worked with him yesterday to see if we could do an interview with him, you know, make him understandable, and his accent is so thick you can't even understand him. But I wanted to tell you that what he said to us, what he was going to say was, my land is being taken away, but it's more of a eminent domain thing. And he doesn't know of any white farmers, he's a white farmer, that have been killed at all. We have somebody else who's saying, oh no, there are lots. But we don't know. We don't know. Here's what I do know for sure. The rhetoric in South Africa is getting dangerous. It is talking about slitting the throats of whiteness. This is the kind of rhetoric that when it comes from top leadership, it changes everything. Beyond that, violence, I don't know yet. And I'm not going to bring you something until I'm pretty sure that that's a reliable source. On the other front, one thing I can bring to you is they are talking about taking land from farmers and giving it away. They say to the people, but it'll be to their pals, because that's the way it always is. And so they will give it to people who know nothing about farming, and South Africans will starve. That's the way it always plays out. Alexander Hammond, he is a contributor for Young Voices. He's been following this, and he just wrote an article, "This is how South Africa could become the next Zimbabwe." Welcome to the program, Alexander. How are you?
Hi, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So tell me what you know is happening and your concerns.
Okay. So what's currently happening, the way I see it, is Cyril Ramaphosa, who is the current president of South Africa, his party is the ANC, the African National Congress. And on the 31st of July last month, he said that they're going to change the constitution. So section 25 of the constitution currently says, if the land is taken away from a property owner by the government, compensation must be just and equitable. Now, Ramaphosa says he's changing the amendment to outline more clearly the conditions under which they can expropriate land, essentially meaning that this just and equitable clause, which compensation must be, is going to be taken away, so it can mean expropriation with no compensation. Mm. So that's the background to what's happening recently as farms are beginning to be seized.
And the rhetoric surrounding, especially coming from the EFF, is disturbing. The president is basically a democratic socialist, is he not?
He's a full-out socialist.
Okay. And
he never joined the Communist Party, but he is a full-out socialist.
Right. And he was campaigning for universal tuition, universal health care, universal food and universal clothing, I think a basic minimum income. I mean, all the stuff they're campaigning for here. But the way he really got into office was playing on the white versus black.
Yeah, there's no illusion that Ramaphosa is some dictator who's suddenly taken over South Africa and he's enforcing his will on the people. He ran on the promise that when he comes to power, if he was to come to power, he would be taking the white land and giving no compensation in return. He calls it it's healing the historic wound doing this. But I think even more concerning is that there's no illusion Ramaphosa is, and in the past, has been very racist towards the whites in South Africa. There's a well-recorded case of that. He actually compared the strategy of dealing whites in South Africa to that of boiling frogs. Now, in this, I mean, he said you must raise the temperature slowly so the frogs don't realize what's happening, because if the temperature is raised too quickly, the frogs jump out of the water. Then, by the time a frog realizes it's dying, it's too late to escape the pot. This is the current president of South Africa.
All right. Let's stick to the devil we do know, and that is the idea of land distribution. So I don't know why people don't get this, because it didn't work in Russia. It didn't work in Zimbabwe. It never, ever works. Can you give us a little history on that?
Yeah, so it seems right now they're following the exact path of Zimbabwe, because in 2000, Zimbabwe under Mugabe started taking the white farmers' land. And from my research, the result was essentially threefold. Violence increased. Five white farmers died and a dozen more black farm workers were killed because they were associating with the white farmers. Food production plummeted. Feed production fell by 60% within 10 years. Mm-hmm. Zimbabwe used to be called the breadbasket of Africa, and not anymore. Exports were down over $1 billion, and then it induced hyperinflation. And the hyperinflation got so bad in the economy They averaged 98% a day at its peak in July of 2018. And it seems very likely that South Africa will be following this course. Violence is slowly increasing. The economy is abysmal right now. And some predict it is heading towards hyperinflation if the trend continues.
So, Alexander, have you had any thoughts on, well, for instance, I mean, here we are watching Venezuela just, I mean, just imploding. People starving, people dying, violence, a ruthless dictator. And we're seeing this march to socialism and this march to redistribution. And people that are your age are seemingly loving it and embracing it when every single example of it being tried fails horribly. Why is this become? Why is this spreading and becoming so popular?
So that's a great question. Obviously, I think it's been known for decades that the youth always go towards socialism. But in the case of South Africa, I don't think it's out the ANC. I don't think we're instilling this policy out of ignorance. I think we're fully aware what the economic consequences will be. I believe that they're instilling these policies to gain the support for the next election, which is next year. And I think the ANC will continue to push these populist policies in order to boost their popularity. Marion Tupi of the Cato Institute has recently said the South African Parliament, them instilling this policy, it doesn't rest in ignorance, but it rests in their desire for survival. And they essentially see it as a way, because they can't control the economy right now, they've been doing awful in a lot of ways, so they see this as their way to appeal to the South African people.
Is the ANC, which is the party of the president, they're kind of partnering with the EFF, which is the really dangerous racist group. Is it the same kind of story that's happening here with the Democrats and Antifa?
I'm not sure it's that bad, their partnership at all, because currently the ANC in the South African Parliament has 62% of the has a majority of 62%.
Okay.
So it's not like they need any more support from these more extremist parties. Perhaps they could be trying to take some of the economic freedom fighters' vote away from them by following some of their policies, but the EFF isn't extremely popular in South Africa by any means. So I'm not sure we can make that comparison quite yet, but it seems likely they could be taking some votes.
Quickly, any evidence that you have found that anything like, black violence killing lots of farmers is actually happening?
Right, sure. So this is a really difficult issue. 8 hours ago, the president, actually slightly longer than that now, about 10 hours ago, the president tweeted that about the South Africa land reform and that he's going to get the Secretary of State to look into it. But in this tweet, he said there was a large-scale killing of farmers. Now, I don't think that's quite accurate, saying large scale. The problem with South Africa right now is there's no official numbers are available.
Mm-hmm.
The best we've got is reports from the South African police and the Transvaal Agricultural Union, which is just a union representing the interests of farmers. And the latest data we do have is from January to March 2018. And it indicates that there is an increase in attacks on the white farms. And in this three-month period, there are 109 attacks and 15 murders on the white farms, meaning one white farmer is killed every 5 days.
That's pretty significant.
That's from my reports, for sure. It's devastating. But the president claiming it's a large-scale killing is down to your definition. But
yeah. Okay.
It's problematic because there's no official numbers.
Good. Alexander, thank you so much. Alexander Hammond. You can follow him at, is it just Alexander Hammo?
Yeah, Alexander Hammond, Alexander Hammo.
Okay, thank you very much. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. There's a really important video or audio that you need to hear and see. About the Manafort case.
Yeah, this is a juror, Paula Duncan. She was on the Paul Manafort trial, and a big Trump fan, wore a MAGA hat to the courthouse every day. Here's what she had to say about the trial.
I don't think I need to hide behind anything. I'm not afraid at all. And I thought that the public, America, needed to know how close this was and that the evidence was overwhelming. I did not want Paul Manafort to be guilty, but he was, and no one's above the law. So it was our obligation to look through all of the evidence. And there were four boxes, four paper boxes full of paper to look through.
She was, a huge Trump fan, and said that there's 18 total charges against Manafort, eight of which he was found guilty, 10 of which were mistrials. In all 10 of the cases, it was an 11-to-1 balance, where 11 thought he was guilty and only one person held out so that he was able to get a mistrial on those 10 charges. So, the evidence was pretty strong against Manafort. And we talked about this from the beginning, from when he one of the first times he got involved in the campaign. I mean, Manafort has been known as a very dirty lobbyist for decades.
Decades.
He was very close worker with Roger Stone. They were partners.
They were the dirty tricks guys from Nixon.
Yeah. And so it was no surprise to anybody that he was going to create a lot of trouble for Trump. But even people who were big fans of Trump saw the evidence and said, look, he's guilty and you got to do it. That's
encouraging. I really respect her.
Yeah.
I really respect her.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.